Yeah, because we're all screwed and Iran's going to get invaded and we're all dead. Yeah, well, let's have some fun. Well, that's kind of my take on it. As soon as something gets incredibly scary, too scary enough for you to actually, you know, do anything about, as is likely in the vast majority of cases, you got to just have a few laughs at it because, for goodness sake, otherwise, because there's nothing you can do about it, what'll happen is you'll just get eternally frustrated. I mean, that's basically all that is. Eternal frustration of stuff that you can't do nothing about. Does everybody else get that as well? You know, ever feel like you, sometimes you're wasting your time? as if perhaps you no longer want to listen anymore because you fear that basically it's going to be a waste of your time to listen to somebody or to listen to the news or something of that nature. And you know, in a majority of cases, hey, you'd be right. There's a heck of a lot of news that you shouldn't be bothered listening to. There's a heck of a lot of people that you also shouldn't be bothered hanging out with. That kind of thing. But, unfortunately, we all do. And we all do quite consistently, don't we? And we all read out news that doesn't matter. We'll watch television shows that just basically waste our frickin' time. We've got plenty of people out there, on the other hand, who've started to recognize all of this and only almost consistently bury their nose into good books, listening to informative talk radio, watching documentaries, that kind of thing. They're getting themselves out of that bad situation. The rest of the people, on the other hand, mate, don't worry about them. Just because they're stupid and they don't know anything about, anything, if they're wearing a uniform or a suit or even T-shirt and shorts, it doesn't matter, okay? Because the fact of the matter is nobody cares about the news media anymore, okay? Don't worry about it. Trust me. You can walk up to practically anybody, anywhere, anytime, start talking about how the media is biased and stupid and full of a-holes and what have you, and you won't receive any, usually, you won't receive any problems. You know, I think we have... my friend Will Ryan, who's just joined us now. Will, welcome to the program.
Sorry about that technical difficulty, Vinny. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can hear just fine. What do you think about that, Will? Do you think anybody's got any respect for the general news media anymore?
Well, I don't think they should have. Sadly, a lot of people still seem to... know, buy their crap and watch their programming, so perhaps I'm wrong.
Yeah, I went to a Skeptic Society meeting the other day, bro, and it was quite funny because, I think the main thing that I found was really funny is that they said that they were skeptics, right? And I mentioned that Monsanto... cafeterias don't have GMO food, like they're not allowed to, kind of thing. And the lady did a little search on her phone for that article, and she says, "Oh, we're the Skeptic Society, and look at this, you know, it's just like comes up with all these things like from before it's news and all this other stuff. And these are not reputable sources. You know, she reads off a whole bunch of different sites. And I go, okay, well, obviously, just trust the mainstream media. They're the only ones that can be trusted. It's funny. Skeptics aren't skeptical of anything the government or the mainstream media says, but they're skeptical of everything that's real, like everything that alternative media says or anything like that. You know, it's hilarious. These people are fucking stupid.
The government's scum. That's my ultimate conclusion. I mean, I actually have respect for skeptical minds. The problem is they don't apply their skepticism to both sides, only to the people who are contrarian to the official story. Then they go after them and they go, where's your reputable sources? Like, I come across one the other day that you've probably reported on this show, Vinny. How 49 former NASA people, 49 or 47, have gone against the mainline climate change theory. And I could have picked it from a variety of sources, but I took it from the Business Insider and threw it up on my Facebook page. Now, one climate changer, of course, because they hate business, all these, you know, eco-nutters who aren't really actually for the environment, they pretend to be, that's their veneer. One of them attacked me just because the link was from the Business Insider, but it was a reporting of a commonly accepted story now, you know? So he goes, well, everything from the Business Insider is the truth. You know, so it's all this, who's a reputable source or not? And of course, the reputable sources are the mainstream sources. And of course, they only have one side of the argument. You know, you don't get the mainstream sources arguing both sides of 9/11, climate change, or whether their, you know, new program is a correct application of public funds or not. You know, they just say, they're from one side of the debate, and it's one-sided only, and that's the Skeptic Society. What was that little cretin Matthew Dentith there?
The dentist.
Hmm. I did my final year paper on conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, and it's not about conspiracy theories, as in looking into any of them. He just does conspiracy theorists and makes up reasons why we're all basically nuts and just suffering some kind of horrible psychological condition as to... And what I found interesting is that they try to say that what we're doing is we're just making this stuff up because we want to make sense of the world. And of course, for some reason, having a ruthless criminal sociopathic elite controlling absolutely everything in your life seems like the most logical thing, like straight off the bat, you know, just instantly. That's the first thing I think of when I wake up in the morning. Hey, there's a ruthless criminal sociopathic elite that needs to do my belt up before I go to work.
Well, you know, they actually think that this makes us feel important and gives meaning to our lives and makes us feel grand, and that we know something that everyone else doesn't, because otherwise we're just total scum. So they believe we're total scum, and I believe they're total scum, and so that kind of balances out. The proof's in the pudding, Matthew Dentith, you're a piece of garbage, and so is the rest of the Skeptic Society. You're wrong about that lying monster, Barack Obama. You guys said he was going to save America. You followed all the mainstream reports in 2008, 2009. You still probably believe that latest crap that's come out saying that Ben Bernanke has saved the global economy. It's a totally ridiculous bubble. They're just hyperinflating the economy. The inflation doesn't hit until a few months in because of the velocity of money. It's going to collapse. The house of cards is collapsing, Matthew Dentith, and your Skeptic Society will collapse with it.
Yeah. Okay, now, skepticism. What is skepticism, Will?
Well, we better go to the approved authoritarian source for this, Vinny, because otherwise I'll have one single word wrong and one of these cretins will pull me up at it and call me a liar and write evil things about me.
Why don't they go live with the tribe of orangutans or something?
I mean, why don't they just openly say they want... sometimes they say they want a handful of elites to make all our choices for us, but then all the rest of the time I get told 97% of climate scientists believe in climate change. Why do you follow the 3%? You know, only because all throughout history, even throughout the last 300 years, it's been the minority people and the minority scientific theories that have generally been correct. You ever notice that, how the majority always shouts down these people who, you know, like Isaac Newton and Galileo, and, you know, the majority attacks them? And so if we have this majoritism, if we're really going to have democratic majoritism, shouldn't then the majority of people make decisions for NASA and their next space shuttle? Even though the majority of people know nothing about space shuttles, but if the majority of people are right on... the economy, the majority of people know what's best for the economy, the majority of people know what's best for the environment, the majority of people know what's best, you know, for a whole plethora of situations, according to this theory, majoritism. Why don't the majority of people, make executive decisions for NASA? What sort of X-wing they should have, what sort of setup they should have on the next shuttle? Let's see how that works. It's just bizarre. I just don't get this whole idea that just because 97% of scientists think this way, that must mean it's the truth. That's truth is not in consensus, guys. It's never been the way.
Well, they're two entirely different things. Like, for instance, I remember I think I was in a class when I was, I think I was 11, St. Peter's College, I think, and there was a math problem, and I thought that the math answer was different to what everybody else said, and everybody kept telling me, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And sure enough, it turned out I was wrong. I was the small shrieking minority saying some nonsense that just wasn't true. And as soon as I found out that I was wrong, I went, oh, I'm wrong. Cool. Sweet ass. On to the next math problem, please. Whereas the opposite side of the fence doesn't react that way. If you tell them they're wrong and prove them that they're wrong, that is instead of their reaction is not, okay, cool, you've proved me wrong. Now I'm going to accept your point of view because you've shown me sufficient evidence. The reaction is no, just cause. I'm still right, even though you've proven me I'm wrong. Now, why? I mean, the skeptics try to psychoanalyze us. Let's try to psychoanalyze them. Why can't they see through it?
They have this ultimate respect for authority. So only the ultimate sources, Britannica and Reuters and MSNBC, and only these people, you know the truth, apparently. And they believe in the peer review process, like that can't be corrupted. You know what I mean? What they forget within science, what they forget within the scientific community, is that the scientific community does not run planet Earth. The economic community runs planet Earth.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. The finance capital runs planet Earth. You know, so what they fail to realize is that it doesn't matter if you have 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 scientists on your side. They can all be bought and paid for. It is a possibility. Mm. But they rule out that possibility and they say it's not practical. The problem, you know, okay, all the core scientists in the 70s said cigarettes were fine and lead additive fuels were fine. Turned out they weren't. They say that flip-flopping was just because of progress in science. No, I say that flip-flopping was because the proof became evident over the period of time, yeah, and the scientists then had to admit, you know, that that was where the proof was because it became far too obvious that smoking a pack a day gave you lung cancer sort of thing. I just can't deny these things, and yet... This is the problem with the present. Without allowing the sort of penalties of time to prove these people wrong, we have to concede that there's climate change and it's man-made and we've got to do something now or else we're all dead by 2050. Even though James Hansen and most climate changers you meet want people dead. They all come down to this people bomb thing that there's too many people and that the system needs exponential growth. They don't even understand basic things like there isn't exactly a finite energy supply on planet Earth because every single new day there is more energy reaching this planet from the sun. So the Earth actually has exponential growth to an extent. Yeah. There's more energy reaching the planet Earth from the sun being photosynthesized, energizing plants. So they get minerals out of the earth also, but you know, a good majority of energy comes from the sun. Then they decompose, then they go into the earth, and then we get minerals out of the earth. You know, so there is actual new energy arriving here every second. This morning there is more energy on planet Earth than there was yesterday morning. You know, so they admit, they say that's a kooky conspiracy theory.
I mean, the sun shines. It's a conspiracy theory.
They believe all these things that aren't conspiracy to be conspiracy. Like, if someone believed in aliens, you know, I'm not saying I do, but if someone believed in aliens, that's not a conspiracy theory. You go to any one of these, you just go to any bookstore, it will say belief in aliens is a conspiracy theory or list them under conspiracy theories. No, it's not, because that's not saying two or more people planning something in secret. That's just saying you believe in aliens. It's not a conspiracy theory. If you believe the government were covering up, you know, an invasion of some sort or whatever, that's, you know, a conspiracy theory that's either true or not. So a lot of people get the definition of conspiracy theorist confused still. A lot of people get all sorts of definitions confused. And I think that's why the majority of people who are seen as nuts are actually, a lot of the time, some people are genuinely crazy, but a lot of the time these so-called nutters are smarter than the average member of society. That's what the skeptic society can't handle.
What, they can't handle intelligent people who actually, you know, care about facts and what have you and are willing to research it?
I just think they're basically a line of defense for the officialdom, to be honest. I don't think they're actually...
You know what, you're right, eh? Because it's sort of like officialdom sort of pins itself as the most skeptical and the most difficult to turn around and you know, obviously somebody who thinks things through a lot, you know, like invading a country and killing a million people and spraying depleted uranium everywhere obviously required a heck of a lot of thought, and so they need to be, you know, protected in every intellectual sense that we possibly can, otherwise lest our perception of reality might collapse, and we've realized that the government anymore is no longer our protector, they are our enslaver. We'll be right back on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with Will Ryan.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Vinnie is absent without leave, so Will Ryan here. I'm the guest turned to the host while we wait for Vinnie Eastwood to fix his technical difficulties. Just see him popping up here on Skype. Plenty of confusion in the world today. Plenty of confusion that, you know, Jimmy was right there. I just saw a quote from Joe Biden, you know, Obama's former vice, saying it should be a global minimum tax. You know, think about that, a global minimum tax. Here's someone that's vice U.S. president thinking he has the authority. I don't know where he'd get that mandate from other than having a world government to impose a global minimum tax. And no doubt climate change would be one of the, you know, excuses under that banner. Global poverty and whatever other red herrings they can sort of lump into that cause and have a 5% minimum global tax. 5% would be pretty nice of them, I suppose. Maybe they should make it 50% and just make you a half slave. 50% slave. That sounds good. I'm sure Vinny would be raging over that one too, but it's just so much confusion. There's so many people who I've noticed this one thing globally, not just in New Zealand here, but from what I can observe across the internet, there's so many people who pretend that they're up against the system or who claim to be against the system and are really for massive socialist programs that would expand government control and power. Just not the sort of governments we see today. But they want a different sort of government. They want a revolution. They don't want the figures and the characters we necessarily have today, but they want them to have more power to help more people. But they don't see the problem with that requires investing more power in them. And government only gets power one way. You know, government by itself is just an empty, hollow term. It means nothing, does nothing, has no say or control. The governments we have today are not a void of power by any means. People aren't afraid of them for no reason. They can throw us in prison. They can do all sorts of nasty things. So the only way they get this power, the only way they get this authority over us is by taking it from us. And sadly, that happens with a lot of people's consent. But for the people who are kind of clued up and know that absolute power corrupts, we understand that there is no consent there. None of us were born signing a social contract or a contract to the government.
Well, were we born getting signed over by our parents to that socialist contract, to the birth certificate and all of that kind of stuff, yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of people know about that, but then think that somehow, you know what I mean, they say, what about the social contract? You've got to pay this high rate of taxation. You've got to pay 50% of your wages to the government, or, you know, 30% income tax plus all these other sales taxes and everything else, about 50%. You've got to, and I turn around and say, well, show me the contract, because the birth certificate, my birth certificate was at birth. You know, I wasn't a thinking person, you know what I mean? I didn't start thinking about politics properly, you know, until I was about 18, 20. Mm. So where is the birth certificate should be signed once you start, the social contract should be signed, if there was one, once you reach age 18 or 21 or were earning and being taxed. Now, if they got people to sign such a contract, people would wake up and they wouldn't sign it. So that's why they just do it by force.
You know, it's very similar to racketeering, isn't it? It's like you get born and then the mafia don in a white lab coat, of course, comes around here and says, look, you need to sign this contract here so we can give you, so we can, you know, protect you. Really, what is this thingy do here? Oh, it just signs your child over to us and we get to take money off them whenever we want. You call that protection? Yeah. It's the government, baby. You know,
exactly.
And that's the problem, though, is that the mafia, when you pay for protection, you actually get it. When the government, on the other hand, let's take money, for instance. Everybody talks about, oh, the government will have to get in debt, right? The government will have to pay for this, the government. And there's this disconnect. They don't recognize that every single time that government pays some money into something, that's your money. That's your money being taken out of your pocket. So think about it. Would you sit there and let's say a salesman comes to your door and says, hey, foreign wars, huge amounts of people dead, depleted uranium contaminating the Middle East. You want to pay for it? Here you go. Here's the contract. Nobody would sign it because people don't want to kill other people. Governments do. Governments do all the time. It's virtually the only thing they're good at.
That's the thing, man. Government is very dangerous because what it does is it externalizes the things we wouldn't want to do ourselves, but we still end up paying for ourselves. And then it externalizes them to a third party that is evil and ruthless and then employs, you know, some disadvantaged people or whoever they can to basically do these horrible things. Whereas within a voluntary individualist sort of society, a lot of those things wouldn't be embarked upon. Now, for instance, the local council over on Waikiki Island where I live wanted to spend $130,000 on a sculpture in a park called Allison Park that already has three other sculptures, one being a Masonic obelisk, one being a sculpture bought off a rapist for $7,500 a few years ago. I believe that's the price. Actually, a convicted rapist made this other sculpture. And I don't know who made the third one. I don't know. You know, maybe a pedo or something, but... Then they wanted to spend $130,000 on another one. It's ridiculous, man. I absolutely couldn't believe it. And I turned around and said to one of the local board members, I said, you could plant the whole thing out in native trees. This was about 8 acres or something of field. You could plant it all out and you could put a community garden in there. It would probably cost about $40,000 all up. You could even have a community day where everyone could come out and help plant and get some vitamin D and get off their asses. But no, we've got to buy another rapist sculpture. You know, these are public funding things. No individual would ever do unless there was some crazed, wild eccentric. If some millionaire decided to put a $130,000 sculpture on his property, everyone would call him mental. Everyone would say he's obtuse and decadent. But when the government does it, it's fine. It's good for the public. I like it. It looks, you know, it suits my square glasses. And it's just pathetic.
That's just the insanity, you know, with the right. I love that. So it's a school, right? Or just some random park?
It's just a random public park. It's a council, Auckland City or Super City owned park.
Are they planning to rape people in this park and that's why they've got it, you know, so it's like a warning sign to other people? That one was done by a racist, ergo if you come to this park, you're probably going to get raped in the middle of the night behind a tree.
I don't know. I mean, the park's, you know, it's pretty nice. I've walked through there at night. I didn't see any rapists hiding behind the obelisk or anything, but they want a new sculpture there, man. It's just an example of these mental people that just need batting around the side of their head, I'm telling you. Like, seriously, like, if I run into one of those local board people on the park, you know, I don't know what I have to do, but I'm telling you, they're just...
If I meet one of those local board members in that park in the middle of the night, I'll rape them.
Have you seen them, man? I don't think. Anyway, we're getting pretty low here, Vinny. This is going to be hate crime.
At least I didn't give them enough grand to a rape or something. It's like reverse prostitution. You pay somebody to force themselves on you.
I think this is thought crimes now, Vinny. I'm going to have to report you. But
well, just don't abort me.
Oh, you're past age 3. We can only abort up to 3-year-olds because they have the IQ of a Labrador, remember, according to the Obama administration.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Not real people until they know how to, like, spell and count and write little short stories and what have you as well.
Yeah, that's Cass Sunstein. Yeah, I mean, Cass Sunstein, James Hansen, all these anti-human people. James Hansen, if you ever listen to this, please kill yourself. I'm not inciting violence. I'm saying peacefully, James, pick up a gun and shoot yourself. Because you're out
please,
there.
Please shoot yourself.
Because you're out there calling for other people. You're calling for mass genocide. You're a sick, anti-life, anti-human. And using this environmental populism to get behind this old world eugenics minded stuff, it's really sick and cruel. Really sad. But, I mean, that's my thing about majoritism, though. They can do so many things in the name of the public good that the public wouldn't choose to do themselves. You know what I mean? And you've got people's lives torn apart. You've got people, you know, on the bones of their asses. And here they want to spend $130,000 on some sculpture. It's just bizarre. I mean, these people are just on another planet. Just totally.
Did they really are not?
You know, and that should be reimbursed back to the ratepayers, if you ask me.
They're the ratepayers now.
Who's that, sorry?
They're not the ratepayers anymore, Will. They're the rapepayers.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, no. People are being raped, and people think that's an exaggeration. No, it's not. You just need to sit there and break down the numbers. You know, people are being raped against their will. If Coca-Cola or Monsanto or some other corporation that you don't like, and the left particularly don't like, yeah, for whatever reason, if they came up to you and demanded 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% of your wages, you'd go berserk. You'd do the two fingers to them, tell them where to go, right? But if the government does it, they just go, oh, but, you know, the social contract, everyone's got to pay. Look, we all do. That's just the way it is. And you don't like it, then you're some sort of criminal. You deserve to go to prison like, you know, Wesley Snipes or something.
It's that slave mentality, you know. They don't want to do anything.
Yeah. And the government can only do it because it's got all those people like that. It's got all these hordes of sellouts and unthinking people who are just, they'll pay for walking licenses in 10 years' time. You know, in Philadelphia, it's illegal to text and walk on the sidewalk. It's $120 fine.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, and I wouldn't be surprised if they start trying to pass it here. And it's just mental.
Oh, yeah, they will. They will. They've already done text and drive, talk and drive. I mean, it's only a matter of time before it's, you know, somebody will be pulled over on a bicycle for, I don't know, taking a call while cycling or something. I suppose that is pretty dangerous, but walking down the street, you know, what are you going to do? Have a head-on collision at 50 kilometers an hour while you're in mid-walk?
You know how they can settle this, though? If you really start digging deep into it, the only way they can say that texting and driving or texting and walking in a public place is illegal is because they own the public places. You know what I mean? The only way they can have a nanny state is by owning more and controlling more themselves. And these are those government assets everyone loves so much. You see what I mean? They need to own your surroundings, to own the factories and everything else before they can own you. And yet we've got Ports of Auckland and we've got the Green Party and we've got all these other groups in New Zealand and around the world calling out for more government ownership. They see that it's given them more power. But what it really does is gives the policymakers more power. Not them, because government has an apex. You know, it's not this egalitarian paradise they imagine. It has an apex of control. Yeah, that's the problem. So on your private property, if the government tried passing, saying you can't text and walk around your house, you know what I mean? Then you could actually take them to court.
Yeah.
But when it's on public property, their property, which is supposedly collectively owned by you, the public, they can make the rules. And if you break their rules, they can send a police team or SWAT team after you.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, that's lovely. With your money. All with your money. or if they can't do it because the government teaches people to be responsible, right? And don't get into debt and don't go to loan sharks and don't do all these irresponsible things and you know what I mean? And eat 5+ a day. Meanwhile, the government are these fat, disgusting-looking creatures sitting around, can't even balance the budgets. They can't even balance the budget. You know what I mean? They're spending $57 billion. They're taxing about $48 billion. They're borrowing the rest.
Well, they're hypocrites, you know. They sit around don't do this, don't do this, when they're doing it. Don't be fiscally irresponsible.
Oh, my God! John Key! He gets the country into $400 million in debt a week, and then he tells the people to tighten their belts! You've got to be kidding me!
I mean, let's be conservative here. Let's say they only borrow $7 billion a year. So say they're pulling in about $50 billion. They're spending about $57 billion a year. Now, here's the problem we have. Like, in my view, I say we need to cut $7 billion from the budget. We need to at least balance the books. I'd cut a lot more off it.
Yeah.
We'll come back after
indeed.
The break.
Like in the French Revolution. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Will Ryan is my guest. TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room over there if you want to. Call in number is 218-339-8525. We'll be back in a few minutes, folks.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise. Cause we don't know.
Yeah. But basically, well, you know about the New World Order, you recognize that there's really no escape and pretty much every single country is under its clutches. So anybody can talk about anything about the New World Order messing them around in their own frickin' country and you can be guaranteed it's already happening to you. That's what I love about the New World Order. It brings us all together because we now share common enemies. Will Ryan is my guest for today. I'm going to be doing that for 2 hours talking about goodness knows what else. You know, we don't have problems coming up with stuff that we hate to talk about because, you know, it's almost impossible to run out. It's like we're in this wonderful wonderland of unlimited scumbaggery, which we can, you know, well, basically endlessly debate, endlessly talk about. Because it's endless, I feel like, I don't know, patience needs to be developed here. You ever notice, well, everybody wants everything to happen right now. We want to defeat the New World Order like tomorrow or whatever, but it never does. And they get frustrated because they're hoping that it will when they should know. And as G. Edward Griffin Jordan Maxwell and all these other older truthers who've been doing it for 50 years or something like that would tell you, change comes. It just doesn't come as quickly as, you know, a youth would want it to.
Yeah, well, I'm sort of worried about the sort of change that we're heading towards. That's a difficulty I have. I mean, I think there's a lot of, you know, I wanted to get into this with Shane Malver or Joe Carolyn more, but I think there's a lot of people who claim to be waking up to the system and sort of, you know, having this great moment of understanding and clarity, who I feel are just going into the system's hands. And that's may sound arrogant of me, but that's the way I call it. I do not think that humanity is waking up to these sorts of global agendas that we need to anywhere near soon enough or anywhere near with any of the understanding required, to be honest. No, I just and but besides that point, humans are very resistant to change anyway. All structures are very resistant to change. Things always tend towards some sort of equilibrium. It's pretty hard to make anything drastic happen in a short period of time unless you control drastic amounts of something that's hinged upon resources, money, power. I tried to tell someone that money isn't power the other week and got laughed at.
Yeah.
And because money alone, in my view, isn't power. Because it requires, you know, there's plenty of millionaires out there who are just as frustrated with the government as you and I are. They don't have any power. They might be in this mythical 1% club, but they don't have any power because it's not just money that's the only distinction, that's the only entrance qualification to getting into the corridors of power. It's really so that's another kind of myth that gets well perpetuated. But you know, can you hear me, Vinny? I'm just having trouble hearing you.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can, mate.
Okay, sorry about that. I think I might have been talking not in the right direction. The power structure of society, I see, is basically it all stems from money, and that's the where it starts, and that's where all the control structure starts. Kind of like how a magician's act will depend entirely on his greatest trick. Once they've got all that power, once they're capable of making it up, essentially, and let's make no mistake here, money is power. If I had the power to build a building or whatever, hey, if I had enough money, I could pay enough people to build that building. Okay, that's power. It allows energy to basically be kicked into gear in the way that I want it if I have that energy to give, you know?
Well, money... Yeah.
Rather than me having to, you know, put my own blood, sweat, and tears or whatever, money is simply stored energy, so I can force other people. Well, it's not really force or anything. It's more like bribe other people, any amount of people, via their circumstance. It's like you want to eat tonight. Well, then you have to go and build this for me. What does that thing do? Oh, well, it's a tyrannical device that'll be a death ray that we implant on the moon, kills everybody. But if you don't do it, you're not going to eat tonight, so you won't be around to see the end of the world after we kill it with the death ray anyway. They just get everybody into these situations where they have to do something horrible, even though they know it's horrible, because they don't have a choice. That's how much power money is. It's a horrible power source at the moment, solely because it's in the hands of people who don't appreciate or use that power for good.
Well, I mean, here's my sort of devil's advocate view.
Just don't have a problem with money at all, you know. Just if somebody's using it to do evil things, and let's face facts here, the New World Order, every single thing that they do with their money is evil.
Well, I mean, here's the problem that I see. If someone's going to spend money on some sort of venture, developing what have you, most of the time they do it to make money, so it has to be profitable. And so if they built a Death Star that was going to kill everyone, it probably wouldn't be profitable. It would probably just be kind of like an expensive hobby, because not a lot of people would support it with their wallets in terms of, you know, let's go visit the Death Star today, shall we, kids? Or like, I don't know, like, I don't, would it become an eco-tourism thing? I don't know. But my point is, they generally have to spend money in ways that are supported by the marketplace to be able to then make money from the marketplace that gives them a return on their investment in whatever venture it was.
Well, I understand. that doesn't count with, say, mainstream media who just keep consistently getting bailed out by these mysterious angel investors with quadrillions of dollars.
Yeah, that's because their risk in what they're selling, and whether it's liked or not, is being backed by someone else. And that's the problem with risk being guaranteed. That's the problem with guarantees in general, I think. But I would actually argue that money itself can't be good or evil.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's an inanimate object. And as evil applications as money can have, it can't be any more evil or even as evil as the human applying it. And so if we removed money, like a lot of people believe if we remove money, we remove a lot of the social stratification, as Peter Joseph likes to call it. We remove a lot of the, problems in general that currently seem to stem from money. They don't actually stem from money, in my view. They stem from the fact that humans are flawed, that we can be incredibly nice and giving and caring and loving, or incredibly evil. That's just the way we are.
Flawed, we're actually balanced.
That is a balance. Yeah. That's what the whole Masonic checkers seems to be about. But,
I went around to my mate's place the other day, and he gave me, I think, maybe 24 movies. And I've watched every single one of them with the exception of one. And you know how many one of those movies had a Masonic floor or a pyramid in it somewhere? Every single one of them.
Yeah. It's like the Bond series and everything. Yeah.
Like a X-Men First Class, for instance. Where does Professor Xavier live? Oh, that's right. He lives in an old house in the country. Really? What color are the tiles in the kitchen? Black and white.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But then the symbology becomes normalized, and then people think it's crazy if you point it out because they don't. Yeah, anyway. It's just, but
they can't call me crazy for noticing it in every single movie. Like, what's the likelihood that that happened by accident, that a black and white Masonic floor, which has a very specific and occult mysticism meaning, what do you think the likelihood is of that all coming into all of these different movies that were made by all of these different studios exactly the same way?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's not... I mean, in Bad Boys 2, they have a truck in one scene that drives past, and it's got the actual Masonic square and compass on the back of the truck and all these other sigils and stuff. I mean, it's not being made up. It's not a misinterpretation, of course. Yeah, they put their stuff out there. I mean, yeah. Once you can notice it, you notice it everywhere, and if you prior to that, you don't really give a damn, but yeah.
It's true. My girlfriend's now, Sarah is now starting to notice it. Well, it's real funny. Like, I'll be sitting there, we'll be watching TV together or something like that, and she'll go, Masonic floor. And I'll be like, that's my baby.
I mean, have you seen the one with a Dutch TV host who was a convicted pedophile? Have you seen that guy? And he run a TV show, and it has a little kid come on stage, and he's like almost licking the child.
Ooh.
Have you seen that one? Well, it turns out he was a Freemason, right? You need to put this video up on your website or something, man. Turns out he was a Freemason.
Dude.
And on the set, it has a little lounge suite. It's like one of those like talk shows and like an Oprah type thing, the Dutch version. And on the set anyway, he's got a red couch. And either side of it, he's got two pillars, and they're wrapped in this spiraling checker. So he's got Boaz and Yakin, the pillars of the lodge, wrapped in the good and evil duality. And he's literally on this one show, he had this child on who was like some disease sufferer, I think, survivor. And he was literally holding the child in his lap, and he's like licking the child and looking all just, and it was just, it's insanely disturbing. It's insanely this, and now he's away in the slammer, luckily. I think Vinny's mic's just cut out there, but we'll be right back after this short break.
Thank you.
0439 85 25. It looks as though the caller line is now open. It has been so for about 5 minutes or so. So they should be working. Should be working. Call on in, ladies and gentlemen. There's much to talk about. There always is. Will Ryan is my guest. Now, talking about the what were we talking about? The fact that evil is an inanimate object can't be thought of as evil, right? Sorry, money is an inanimate object, can't be thought of as evil. And I remember a conversation I was having, I think it was with Dilip Rupa down at the down at Rupa's Cafe. And he's been activist for a long time, family history of it and what have you. And I was talking about white propaganda and black propaganda. Now, you know how some people are kind of a bit sensitive about racism? And you're talking about an inanimate object like black and white propaganda, you know, just how the technical term is actually done, like white magic and black magic or whatever. That's just the term. There's no race implied. And it was funny because that's how he sort of approached it, is that I was being racist because I was talking about the difference between black propaganda and white propaganda. And I said, well, I can't be, because I'd be no more racist as I'm talking about a white car or a black car. You know, he says, yeah, but they're inanimate objects. And I say, well, so is propaganda. So often what happens is we kind of get our own ideas about what right and wrong is, and we go and impose that on other people. And as a result, we kind of put a, we hold a pin on our fellow man because they don't believe what we believe, and we have to force them. They're wrong. We have to do something to make sure that they believe the certain things that we believe, etc. It's kind of like this this God complex, don't you think? Well, these people are just like so full of themselves in the higher up elite levels that all of this infighting that people are just engaging in all the time, I'm sure they're just sitting back and cracking up, laughing about how we nitpick about irrelevant things that don't matter. Meanwhile, their troops and technologies and scumbaggery closes in around us.
I mean, I can see that side. I can see that argument. I can also see that. I also tend to think, though, that a lot of things we're arguing, a lot of things that are being debated in the political hemisphere do matter, regardless of, you know, the perspective from a controlling elite or whatnot. I think they matter. I think you know, an idea whose time has come, sort of thing, is bulletproof. It's definitely what you said before. It's definitely a complex that I've been accused of myself, is trying to force views on other people. And I always make the point that you sure have strong opinions, and people are like, you're stating your opinion as fact. Well, no, you're interpreting my opinion as fact. Of course I believe my opinion. Of course I believe my opinion to be true, otherwise it wouldn't be my opinion and I wouldn't be stating it. But if you interpret it to be true, it's up to you. You can take it with a pinch of salt. You can say it's a complete nut bar, he doesn't know anything. You can say that about anyone, and you should. You should be skeptical of what people say, and you should do your own research, and you should sort of work things out for yourself. The problem is a lot of people don't, for whatever reason. There's 1,000 reasons under the sun, and there'll be another 1,000 once they've gone through them, not to really question anything, if we're going to be as vague as possible about it. Inanimate objects, though, Vinny. This whole money debate, I think, is one worth exploring because it just comes up over and over and over again. See, people say money is the root of all evil. No, it said the love of money. You know, the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil, in my view, because money is a human creation, and so to love it is to embody the man, which is a sin against God.
I disagree to an extent. Like, I think money is power. Like it literally is kind of like an energy, right? Like a battery, or like a gun, or something like that. They all have their own different terms of power. But money is the most interesting form of stored energy, because it can be transmuted into virtually any form, because there's very little that can't be bought if you have enough money.
The thing is, though, Vinny, I'm against people counterfeiting. I'm against these central banks printing money and hoarding money because that's a fraudulent source of money. But the problem is, if someone has $10,000 in their bank account that they worked hard for, they had to expend energy in order to get that unit of energy. And then you work out that this currency isn't actually money, so it doesn't have intrinsic value. It can't actually store the energy. And the wealthy people know, contrary to what a lot of the poor people think, they don't sit on their cash, as people think. They hoard their cash and keep the poor people from getting it. No, that's not true. They know its currency has to be moved, hence the term current. It has to flow. It has to be moved through the economy. And they move it through the economy in ways they know best, called investments. Or whether that means funding a new McDonald's down the road because they think that's going to give them over 10% return, or, you know, XYZ, a nuclear power plant, weapons development, whatever. Whatever they're funding, because they believe that that's going to give them some sort of return on investment. But the point is, wealthy people know that this money isn't actually money, it's currency. It's not a store of wealth, and it has to be moved. But the problem is, in moving it implies a risk that they could lose it to someone else in that flow. See? And so it becomes a competition of intellect in that sense. And then we hope that the competition of intellect results in more efficient, better products that more people can afford over time. And I was trying to point out to a guy the other day that that's actually happened with all the inequalities that we can talk about. In the 1920s, for instance, only elites, Rothschilds, sort of drove around New York in cars, you know, or their funded man, J.P. Morgan and stuff. Yeah, whatever.
It's one of the perks of being in the elite is you get access to all the new whiffy technology and what all the other plebs have to do, everything else manually.
The plebs walked around, or they had horse and cart and stuff like that, if they were lucky. 80 years later, 90 years later, the plebs have got better cars than what the elites then had. Yeah, they get them on Trade Me for less than $2,000. Yeah, and the elites have the new, you know, Jaguar XFs and Bentley Arnages and whatever else. But still, it's got better for the common person. You see what I mean? Like a rising tide lifts all boats type theory has worked. Trickle down has worked to some extent. It just doesn't work fast enough, in my view, because the government puts all these interventions, all these dams in place to stop money flowing through the economy because they're too busy being a third party in every transaction and taking their water cash.
Mm.
And so that's and so a lot of things
don't
like the basic. We live like kings, really. We live better than. We live today better than Henry VIII dreamed of living.
Oh, you're
dead on there.
And I fully agree with that because I constantly have a sort of a full-on realization almost every day, like, man, my life is cool. I can talk to people over the other side of the world. I can drive around. I can go to places and do this, that, and the other. And I'm not overly wealthy, but look at these amazing things that I can do. And so it dawns on me now as you're saying it that, yes, the trickle-down effect has worked to a certain extent. Everybody else has had a certain things that have been granted to them. Usually, I think it's more the technology aspect of it, and the advancement and the planned obsolescence of technology. You know, like for example, if there wasn't planned obsolescence, do you think some of the elite might still be driving around in those old school cars or something like that? Or maybe people would just be buying one car and having that last through generations of their family or something like that. But it's not the case.
We're in a constant state of change.
Yeah, exactly. This is the interesting thing about the whole trickle-down mentality is that privatization of public assets and what have you has essentially given the trickle-down effect its great mantra. Okay, privatization, we need to privatize this, we need to privatize that, or whatever. Now, I'm not 100% sure what's best at running an evil corporation, the state, or an evil corporation running itself. Because I think that what Winston Peters was talking about is commission management in terms of running a strategic resource and asset is a much better idea than selling it off to private ownerships or entirely running it by yourself. That way, anybody can come in and run the company so long as they're sufficiently qualified to do so. And if they run it successfully, they get a commission. But they don't wind up owning the company. We own the company. We get the access to those reserves and those assets and what have you. The real question becomes, who's got the approval process? Who is it that's capable of doing it? And in general, it becomes the super wealthy who are capable of influencing contracting and privatization to suit their ends, not the ends of the people whom they're buying the assets off to a degree. So in that sense, the trickle-down effect is very dangerous, because what it does is it allows perhaps technological advancement of the majority of the population, let's say in a first-world country like New Zealand. The difficulty becomes that the power over that society's future gets put into the hands that are at the top of the trickle-down society, not freeing those below that are advancing with a little bit better technology all the time.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate again here. Can a company force you to buy their goods as much as a government can force you to fund their programs?
Yeah.
They actually can't. No, because a company cannot write... I know governments and corporations get into bed with each other, but if we just look at a private model versus a public model, a private model cannot force me to buy their stuff. The stuff has to be a good price and what I deem to be good quality. Now, a lot of people buy cheap Chinese crap that is just a good price and not good quality. That's up to them. That's their own choices. Some of them are poor choices. Some of them are choices out of circumstance, what have you. But a company does pursue its own self-interest, but its self-interests are only realized if they pursue other people's interests too. See that? Because to maximize their gain, for Steve Jobs to maximize his gain, like his share price went up like ninefold in as many years from 2000.
Because they just got busted like yesterday or the day before for running a criminal conspiracy with ebooks, all right, and charging the 99.
It's part of it, but part of it is also because a lot of people love his products. Let's face it. And they're now actually a bigger company than evil Microsoft. I mean, so, you know what I mean? So Apple, the sort of alternative, you know, kind of, you know, leftist choice, actually become more of a super corp than Bill Gates. And I'm not a fan of Bill Gates, but you have to give credit where credit's due, I suppose. They're intelligent people. Point I'm trying to make is, you see Winston's model, and I sort of I can see where it's coming from. But you see, in trying to do something good like that, and trying to say we're going to have it privately managed but still publicly owned, you complicate it and you create this complicated arrangement whereby selecting the board of trustees or the CEO becomes a very difficult and therefore highly likely to corruption process.
Well, ironically, this is actually the method that the Rothschilds and DuPonts and all the wealthy families use to run the companies they own. They don't run any of that wealth. Their commission managers do.
Well, because they want corporate monopolies. Because they actually want to crush competition using the existing capital they have, but they can only crush competition, really, through infiltrating government and then using force of government to write legislation in their favor to suit XYZ companies they own.
Well, the only way that they can really crush competition entirely is by forming cartels and false choices behind products. You know, if you've got Pepsi or Coke or whatever, people no longer have a choice because Pepsi and Coke own every other drink company kind of thing.
There's always a choice. Neither. It's called water. You know, or don't...
And now they're buying out the water companies.
Yeah, but there's all I'm saying is...
There's Coca-Cola always, Water Company.
All I'm saying, though, Vinny, is if people are really in control of their own emotions and not slaves to their emotions, a thing called, you know, consciousness, then they can make their own conscious decisions. You do not have to buy anything. The problem is you do not have to support any corporation unless the government gets involved and says insurance is compulsory, healthcare is compulsory, this is compulsory, unions are compulsory. These are the monopolies. You know, if you have a public health program, that means everyone has to pay it, regardless of them choosing a private healthcare model. And so you're actually interfering with their own personal choice of how to medicate their own body. And so that's what the public model does, under the banner of we're helping the poor people who couldn't afford to look after their own health in a privatized healthcare system. The problem is,
ironically enough, because you're taxing them so much and you're taxing everybody so much, there's not enough money in the economy to even pay for that healthcare anyway, and you wind up having to go borrow it from overseas.
Because in the because in New Zealand, the government has about 30% of the economy's money in their own hands. So, you know, you've got 120 people deciding on 30% of 4.2 million people's wealth. That is a big problem. That's called a concentration of power, and it results in corruption. And corruption isn't just like what something the SFO finds. Corruption is simply taking money from someone by force and giving it to someone else. It's in a non-voluntary sort of arrangement. It's not an agreement.
Well, see, taxation in itself, therefore, is completely immoral.
It is, and that's the only way you can run public models, though. So the only way you can run a public... You see what I mean?
Like that. It's by basing it on an immoral system of taxation.
In this current structure, yes. And that's... You know, that's where Occupy's heading, that's where Socialist Aotearoa leans, that's where Unite leans, and that's what I mean. I have quite a big problem with a lot of the activist community in New Zealand, and it's not just here. It's this appeal of the problem with socialism is, the problem with collectivism is, we want more than we can afford. We always want more than we can afford. We're humans. We're always looking at things we can't afford. Always. All
of us. Back in the day when people wanted something they couldn't afford, they didn't get into debt. They saved.
Yeah, but now the interest rates are artificially low, so saving sort of does bugger all. So, and the interest rates are kept low to try and stimulate the economy. Why? Because low interest rates means it's cheaper to borrow money, it's cheaper to get a house, it's cheaper to do all those things, right? So people say, oh, it makes sense to get a house now. So this is them trying to artificially create a boom in the economy. It's fake, though, and leads to a whole bunch of other problems down the line, like people not being able to repay their debt and then defaulting and then the banks owning everything.
Yeah, the banks on Wall Street are saying that the economy is in recovery and it's going great and is the highest stock market since like 1998 and blah, 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 blah. And they're talking about another round of quantitative easing. Why? Because the recovery in the economy isn't real. It's fake.
It's all fake, Vinny. It depends on people's emotions. That's the only way there's trends in markets, because people make the same mistakes over and over and over again.
Yeah, especially if there's a big incident overseas that makes you really afraid and then madly rush and buy a particular commodity, makes that commodity go up. What changed that commodity? Nothing. Just people's fear and panic and rushing to buy it. We'll be right back after the break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road.
Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show that goes out everywhere, man.
With a high canvas covered load.
Welcome back, everybody. All right, we got Lisa calling in from East Texas. The other people that want to call in is 218-339-8525. Lisa, you're on air with myself and Will. Welcome.
Hey, guys. I think since no longer necessary to have a president who is born in this country, United States. I think I'm going to just write you guys in on a ticket come November. So, because you guys have a good conversation going. So, anyway, hey, I wanted to mention that I think I've found an exception to the rule as far as private companies not being able to force people to buy something. And case in point, we have had to have a smart meter installed by a private company who basically has a monopoly on the energy grid. And I guess you could say, well, you don't have to take it, but then we get our electricity shut off. So, and that leads to other problems. I'd like to get off the grid if I could, but this house needs energy. So they're rapidly monopolizing things and centralizing things. And to me, that's kind of the root of the problem. You know, free enterprise is great, and I'm all for it, but it's just become so monopolized and centralized and, based on a very corrupt banking system. It's just based on a corrupt banking system.
We've got like five energy companies that provide the electricity for New Zealand, right? And they're all owned by the government and work as a cartel. And then, of course, we've got like, what, four or five, again, oil companies that operate and produce all our petrol for us and everything like that. They run as a cartel too. There's no difference between a government or a corporate cartel these days because they're working together.
Well, yes. I mean, our legislature 5 years ago the man from the company called Encore said, well, the legislature asked us to do this 5 years ago. Where were you? And I said, well, I didn't have any knowledge of that. So, you know, there, it's government. It's basically fascism. It's government and big monopolistic business working together hand in hand. And in Texas, we're actually completely separate energy-wise from the rest of the country. Our grid is completely separate, and we're being used as Texas and California as the test model for, you know, for the smart grid technology. So we're fighting it as Texans,
Lisa,
just like California.
Well, I want to ask you a question about this. Where do you draw the line between a government's responsibility, personal responsibility, and a corporation's responsibility, just in general in the community?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question and probably beyond the scope of what we can get into here. I'm not trying to be a politician here, but I just wanted to ask Lisa.
Yeah.
Does this company in Texas, does it receive any subsidies from the government? Is it in any way tied to the state?
Not that I know of. I haven't done extensive research on their balance sheets and so forth. But they could. I'm sure they could. But not to my knowledge right now. The problem
the
is we
I
had
agree
a lot
with
of...
You. I'm against...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm against monopolies, and you know, be they corporate or government, I don't care, because you know, at the end of the day, people say privatization or people say government run or whatever. At the end of the day, it's just people behind something. And what I'm against is the people behind whatever it is using force on other people to have to be funneled into their system. And so with government, you get a vote once every, you know, 3 or 4 years, depending on where you are. With corporations, you get to vote every single day or every time you have to open your wallet to them, or you can choose to close your wallet to them. The choices may be tough, but we always have a choice. Now, even if it's a monopoly and it's centralized, I would say that's actually the opposite of a free market. That in a true free market, if there's capital floating about, and if the government aren't persecuting everyone economically, then if a monopoly is doing something, say the monopoly is making $80 billion a year profit, some other speculator could come along and go, you know what, I'll take $40 billion a year profit, I'll do that for less profit, and I'll provide the same service, and he'll look into the infrastructure he needs and the capital outlay he needs to be able to do that. And he could come in and undercut them by taking less profit. And then that competitive scenario would actually lead to less and less profit takings and lower prices. As long as things don't get in the way, like unions saying, we demand $15 an hour, we demand this amount of money. When big lobby groups use force against private individuals, that's what screws up the kind of race to the bottom. And we need a race to the bottom of prices. So that might mean nominal wages go down, but then real income actually goes up. You can actually buy more for your dollar. Like if you were getting, for instance, I use this analogy in New Zealand, there's a lot of people saying everyone needs $15 an hour as a minimum wage. Well, what's $15 an hour when bread costs $5 a loaf? Yeah, so you can get three loaves for an hour's work. If you got paid a dollar an hour, let's take an extreme example, not $15 an hour, you got paid a dollar an hour, but a loaf of bread was 25 cents. Then you could buy four loaves of bread for an hour's work. So nominal wages seem ridiculous. So you want everyone on a dollar an hour. But in real terms, we'd be better off in that example there. And I think that's something that people kind of overlook a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think in America we have this facade and this a facade of being a free market, and we just aren't. And people haven't completely woken up to that yet, and they fight the wrong battles. My whole feeling is that the answer against globalism is localism, and I think people in communities have to care about their local community, their state, and their country enough to demand that their local or their elected representatives support truly free markets and free choices, don't support the monopoly of the banking system. We need to have competing currencies. I mean, there's so much that could be done that would totally free up the market to give individual's freedom, you know. So I'm not going to be voting for any representatives in this next election that are not willing to put forth legislation to give consumers of this, you know, monopolistic electric provider the option to either have a smart meter or not. We need to, you know, that's also not a very free market principle when somebody's forcing a product on someone who is very tied in a very integral way, you know, to a system. So it's kind of getting out of the system, and there are ways to do it, but it's just, it's very complicated. But I well, love free markets, problem. And I want a pure free market, and I want to decentralize the government as much as possible, and that just involves pretty much decimating the federal government as much as possible. That's my answer.
I totally agree.
It's just another way of saying I want to take personal responsibility for myself and my decision and my life, and I don't want anybody else forcing my hand.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And just stay out of my life.
Isn't that the principle of how your country should be run? Nobody can force your hand?
Yes, you know, you might both know this, but, you know, actually Samuel Adams and Patrick Henry, they were furious and actually called the likes of George Washington traitorous for, the move towards the Constitution as opposed to the Articles of Confederacy. I think that's really interesting. They were very concerned about a stronger federal government. And I just think, you know, we love our Constitution so much, and well, some people love it in America, but I think, you know, looking back even farther when there was a much more decentralized system, it kind of makes me wonder sometimes if we should love it so much, because it does provide for things like international treaties becoming the law of the land over, other laws.
Love is something that you need to use sparingly, because if you love something that doesn't love you back, you're going to get your heart broken.
I know. That's a woman thing.
Does the Constitution love you back?
Well, no. It's a piece of, you know, it's a concept. So
it's a powerful idea. It doesn't have to love you back, because what it does is provide you with unalienable rights, which, you know, are the foundation for then a healthy society, we hope. Like, I mean, people talk about minority rights.
Does that mean you love it, or you just recognize its innate value? Like, somebody, for example, could say, man, I love gold, not because they actually love it and want to do things to it in the bedroom, but because...
Love's an overused word, isn't it? Love's a misapplied word. It's like hate. Hate and love are misapplied a lot of the time. But I agree with Lisa. We do need to move towards a decentralized model all around the world, and people don't see the value of that. And the basic value of it is every area is different, has its own concerns, much in the same way as every person is different, has their own concerns. And so we need to decentralize, we need to individualize, and self-sufficiency and getting off the grid and those things you espouse are the absolute opposite of globalist, socialist control mechanisms. And sadly, a lot of people, rather than wanting to decentralize government, want to expand government and to have global governments. They want to go the opposite way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They want to contract out more of their responsibilities to a greater world sort of dictatorship.
They talk about wanting change, but what they're doing is they're actually, in truth, asking for more of the same. We've been getting more and more centralization, less and less personal responsibility, more distractions and entertainments and vain obfuscations of reality for goodness knows how long. And it's getting consistently worse. Everybody sees it, that everything's getting worse for economically, spiritually, physically, whatever. Our health's in the toilet. Okay? Everybody sees this exact same problem. And they're so foolish as to think that doing more of the same thing is actually going to change things and change it for the better. No, it's going to change things and change things for the much, much, much most uber worse.
Well, you know, also, most people don't realize that, you know, the move towards global government isn't always so obvious. It's not always orchestrated from the State Department or the halls of Congress or from the Supreme Court. It's happening every single day in local communities. Vinny, you know what I'm going to say? through local officials who have no idea what they're, well, many don't have any idea what they're doing, implementing Agenda 21. That's global government. And it's a big bypass from the global to the local. It just goes straight to the local. They don't even have to deal with Congress. And that was an ingenious, diabolical plan that is really going on, and still most people can't wrap their head around it, or it's just not sexy enough. You know, it's not in the camp of Republican or Democrat in this country. So, you know, just
people let's catch Coney. Let's catch Coney.
Advertising. Advertising is the way to do it, okay? It consists of the ability to manipulate people's minds by using three things to appeal to their senses. Sex, cravings, and fear. And that's it. If you can come up with a concept that sells Agenda 21 and the concept of it to people and opposing it, you know, if I was to try and sell the idea of opposing Agenda 21 and wanting to know what it is to somebody, I'd have to make it sexy. I'd have to make them want to crave it. And I'd have to make them want to fear it as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they do. I think the key is definitions. Do people really understand the definition as the UN means it of sustainable development? No, they don't. They have no idea what the UN means by that. The definition
even
is
a lot of people
really
in the truth. Even a lot of people in the truth movement I've found use the word sustainable a lot.
Oh yeah,
the word sustainable is fine. I think the word's fine. We shouldn't let these guys own it. That's my view. I think sustainable is fine, but I mean that it's got all this misconstrued sort of, you know, meanings now, thanks to these climatologist crowd. But I mean, you hit the nail on the head before, Vinny. The strongest emotion. People think the world runs on greed, but even amongst the greedy people, it runs on the strongest emotion by far is fear. The world runs on fear. I mean, it really does. Eh? Markets crash so much faster than they rise. Everything runs on fear. You know what I mean? People lose confidence far quicker than they gain confidence in anything. You know, you just do one bad thing right. You could have helped homeless people. You could have fed the poor. You could do 10 beautiful things, Vinny, in your life. And if you do one slightly ugly thing, that's what you'll go down in history for. Because people just focus on the negative. They focus on the fear. It's really...
That's been ingrained in us, I think. That's why every single day I wake up and I purpose not to be afraid. I'm not afraid. My life has changed a lot and relationships have changed because I decided I was not going to live in fear of the system. And I was going to live life, you know, the way it should be lived with, you know, love and... your relationships, and I'm not afraid of this New World Order crap. You know, I'm not going to be afraid of it. And so many people wring their hands when they hear about it. And I'm like, you know, you can either be afraid, which will paralyze you, or you can say, hey, at least I know what's going on. So now I know how to deal with it. That's how I live my life these days.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people were surprised, like they'll listen to me on the radio or whatever, and then when it's in person, I just have a lot of fun with them. And they're surprised because they think I'd be all deathly scary and, oh my God, life is going to die, and then telling them about all horrible things all the time. But the fact of the matter is there's an awful lot of really awesome stuff that goes on amidst all the bad things. And if you stop paying attention to all those good things, what is your head going to be left with? What is it going to be full of? It's going to be full of negativity. When you study this stuff, you've got to remember that you're studying it.
You're not living it, okay? Live your life, but understand how it is controlled by those who are living theirs, unbeknownst to you. I think that's probably the idea here. We'll be right back after the break, Lacey. You can hold on through the other side if you wish to. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Join us in the chat room at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. It's Vinny with a Y. This is the most important question.
Bonkers.
I wake up every day as a daydream. Every
been in my life, ain't what it seems. I wear crutches but go back to sleep. I act real shallow but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let E give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. I wake up, every day is a daydream. Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. A heavy baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I've got to get a grip.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And Will is disconnected, is he? Oops. I'm going to try and reconnect him, hopefully. All right. Well, anyway, we still have Lisa from East Texas holding. And also, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to call in and join the conversation, the number is 218-339-8525. Lisa, welcome back. One of the things that I wished to define is actually what limits there's supposed to be on government, your personal life, and corporations, conversely. Because if all three are supposed to exist, you know, corporations provide services, people, individuals want them, and government is kind of like the mediator in between. I think that's sort of how it's supposed to happen. That's where the laws are and all of that kind of stuff. So is that how you see it as well, Lisa? Is that the responsibilities we're dealing with here, how to separate the three?
I think it's, you know, it behooves all of us to, I think we have to provide, we have to demand the separation and until people demand the separation between those different entities, they're going to naturally coalesce, you know. They like are magnets towards one another. And you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, you know. So that's why, you know, corporations, I mean, they can be good and they can be bad. They're neutral definition. But when they're given too much legislative leeway and power and ability to, you know, just get their way, wind their way into the arena that's supposed to protect liberties in government, I think that's when things, you know, become really messed up. And they're just allowed to do that through lobbying I know free speech is so important, and then there's the whole topic of, you know, campaign donations and finance, and oh my gosh, it's very complicated. And you know, corporations can really buy their favor. So I don't really know how to answer that. I'm not smart enough to do that yet.
Well, Lisa, let me suggest something here, Lisa. Why is it that corporations lobby the government? And Goldman Sachs lobbies, you know, is paying Mitt Romney and Barack Obama at the same time. And you know, why is this? They want a return on investment, don't they? If they give $1 billion to Barack Obama, they want to see a few billion back. And they got that, didn't they? So they gave him $1.2 billion or something in November of 2008, if my memory serves me right. They ended up getting back how many billion in bailouts? Because they knew they'd probably get into trouble down the track. So that's just corporatism we have, where they're using government to socialize the risk that these private corporations are taking. So that's privatized profit, socialized risk. That is corporatism, but using a socialist model to pull it up, a socialist taxation model that people think is patriotic.
Well, but that's because fascism is socialism. That's why it's called National Socialism. Yeah. Nazis.
But I say take away the reason why corporations lobby the government. Not people say we should limit campaign contributions, we should ban lobbying, we should do all this, pass another law.
Specifically,
what is the exact reason that the corporations lobby the government?
Because they need something, they need a handout back themselves. And so the only reason they lobby the government is because government has the power to give them a handout. Is the government has the power to help them, because government has the power to give welfare, corporate welfare or social welfare. So the poor people lobby the left-wing parties that promise social programs, and the wealthy corporatists lobby the fake conservative parties that promise to give them corporate welfare bailouts. And so we have two people at the pie, sort of the corporatists and the socialists. They all want other people's money. They're both greedy, because what's more greedy than wanting your own money? Not wanting to pay tax. People say it's greedy, right? People are so bloody greedy not wanting to pay tax. Okay, you can call that greedy.
I just want my own money that I earned. Thank you very much.
Exactly. What's more greedy is people who want other people's money. That's more greedy. They don't just want their own. They don't have enough.
Other people's without even having to work for it as well.
It doesn't matter if they're billionaires doing it or dollarers. They're still... Yeah. Taking other people's money in principle.
Because they're greedy and lazy.
They're still thieves. And they're wanting their risk backed by all the rest of the public, because they couldn't steal, because they can't just go to you, Vinny, and just rip money out of your wallet. They use the government and a legitimate sounding body, IRD or IRS in the States, to do it on their behalf with the mass public approval. Legalized, normalized, socialized theft. And that's all it is. But the only reason why corporations, if the corporations were not able to be empowered through government, like Ron Paul doesn't want corporate welfare, right? That's why the corporations aren't backing them. Look at Ron Paul's top contributors, U.S. Army, U.S. Air Force, and U.S. Navy. Mm. Some other.
The government could not give these bailouts and so forth, and these handouts to either side, and if we did not have a Federal Reserve system or an IRS. And I remember G. Edward Griffin, I ordered this interesting pack of CDs, audio CDs, and he actually said that the IRS is not... for the purpose of, it's basically for the purpose of redistributing wealth. That's the only thing it was really started for, that our government could run and did run it before the IRS on the, I guess, the indirect apportionment tax. So there are definitely different models that, we could function by. But we just, unless you cut off the source of the funding, then the problem won't be solved. And so that's why every American, their first demand of a politician that they would vote for, it should be to eradicate the Federal Reserve and fractional reserve lending would be the plan.
People talk about
self, get rid of the Federal Reserve. Thank you, Lisa, for your call. Good points there. We've got our final caller here. You've only got a minute or two on the air with us. Sorry you had to wait on so long. Area code 289. What's your name, sir?
It's Val.
It's what?
Valerie.
Valerie.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi. Big fan.
And what state are you calling from?
I'm calling from Hamilton in Ontario, Canada.
Oh, nice.
Yes, and big fan of the show. I wish we had Canada Freedom Radio.
Well, I don't know. I think American Freedom Radio might need to at some point go through rebranding, because it's kind of becoming global.
I think the Queen, who owns more than half your country, might disagree with that. But anyway.
Well, we could talk. I want to talk a little bit about, and I guess you're all familiar with the Drake interview that's been online.
No? Sorry?
Is everyone sort of familiar with the Drake interview that this is sort of a whistleblower that has come online, and I think David Wilcock has been discussing what this this person has said, and I'm a big fan of Ben Fulford and Kerry Cassidy and David Wilcock and following all their information in regards to whistleblowers.
Yeah. Well, incidentally, we have another listener who's not 20 miles from you.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, you know, on the other things,
I mean, whistleblowers, I think, really need to be protecting anything, but we're kind of running out of time here because I've not heard of the Drake interview or anything, so I can't comment on it. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm very sorry. So maybe I should hold my call till maybe another show, but it's worth looking at.
Call in tomorrow. We're going to be talking about some real awesome stuff. We've got Ben Vidgen in from New Zealand. He's an incredible journalist, man. He's uncovering a whole bunch of stuff about HAARP and quakes and all the stuff that's going on everywhere. It's going to be a great show. And I think we're going to take some callers in. So you're more than welcome to call in there if you can.
No, I most definitely will. Thank you so much for taking my call.
All right, Valerie, well, you have yourself a fabulous day there, Will. You too.
Thank you, Vinny.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for your contributions as well. If you subscribe to the Vinny Eastwood Show for $5 a month, what we do for you is we give you access to our commercial-free archives in high quality with also exclusive interviews that we do off-air, recorded across Skype with big-name guests and whatnot like that. I'm not sure if it's worth it, but if you do it, you know, you're basically supporting the broadcast and everything we're doing here at American Freedom Radio and the Vinny Eastwood Show. So thank you very much, and we'll see you again sometime, folks.